Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
A manhunt in France today for one more suspect in the terrorist attacks and the tail section of the missing AirAsia flight recovered. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. French police have increased security as they conduct a massive search for a woman described as the accomplice of one of the slain suspects behind terrorist attacks in Paris. 26-year-old Hayat Boumediene was the girlfriend of Amedy Coulibaly, who killed four shoppers Friday at a Jewish deli in Paris before being shot dead by police. Coulibaly was an associate of brothers Sharif and Saeed Kouachi, suspects in Wednesday's deadly attack on a satirical magazine that were killed Friday in a police raid north of Paris. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula has claimed responsibility for the attacks, Lisa Bryant reports.
U.S. and Yemeni officials believe that one of the assailants, Saeed Kouachi, either trained or fought alongside Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in 2011. Speaking to France's BFM television shortly before being killed Friday, Saeed's younger brother, Sharif, said he had also been trained by Al-Qaeda in Yemen. The third attacker, Amedy Coulibaly, also died during a police assault Friday. His girlfriend, Hayat Boumediene, is also a suspect. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
A bomb blast Saturday at a crowded market in northeastern Nigeria killed at least six people and wounded about 20 others. The bomb went off at midday in Maiduguri, the capital of Borno State. Media reports say the blast may have been triggered by a 10-year-old girl. There's been no immediate claim of responsibility. And in another northern city, a police official says a car bomb explosion killed two people in a suicide attack. It has been a week of attacks in Boko Haram. This is VOA News. U.S. sources say federal officials and investigators are recommending criminal charges, felony criminal charges, against former CIA Director David Petraeus for allegedly disclosing classified information to his former mistress. The recommendation, first reported Friday by the New York Times, comes more than 2 years after Petraeus, a retired four-star Army general, quit the top intelligence post as news circulated of his extramarital affair. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder will ultimately decide whether to seek an indictment against Petraeus, who is denying passing any classified information. Indonesian authorities say searchers have lifted to the surface of the Java Sea the tail of an AirAsia plane that crashed December 28th, killing all 162 people on board. Recovery teams have attached balloons to the wreckage and floated the tail section to the surface. Investigators hope it contains the cockpit voice and data recorders. The head of the National Search and Rescue Operations in Indonesia says they are still seeking the main body of the plane, which is likely where the majority of the victims' bodies are trapped, of course, because that's what the victims' families are waiting for. The black box recovery is essential to finding the cause of the crash. The U.S. House of Representatives has approved legislation for the construction of a controversial oil pipeline. VOA's William Gallo reports.
Friday was the 10th time since 2011 that the House has passed a bill approving the Keystone XL oil pipeline. But this time, the move is bolstered by a court decision that could make it more likely the $7 billion project moves forward. The Nebraska Supreme Court on Friday approved a route for the nearly 2,000-kilometer pipeline to cross the Midwestern state. Speaking Friday during House debate, Republican Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy said the president now has no reason to veto the bill, as he's promised to do.
There was a legal concern. Well, the Supreme Court dealt with that.
On Friday, a White House spokesman said the president is studying the Nebraska decision, but stressed that if the bill shows up on his desk, it will not be signed. William Gallo, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. stocks ended the first trading week of the year about 0.5% lower in spite of good news on unemployment. The U.S. unemployment rate dropped 0.2% in December to a six-year low of 5.6%. Friday's closely watched report from the Labor Department also said the economy had a net gain of 252,000 jobs. Both figures were better than economists had predicted. The U.S. has issued a global travel warning after the recent spate of terror attacks by Islamic militants. In a statement Friday, the U.S. State Department said kidnappings and hostage events involving U.S. citizens have become increasingly prevalent around the world.
4, 3, 2, 1, 0. And lift off of the
And
SpaceX
an unmanned SpaceX booster rocket propelled a cargo capsule with 2,300 kilograms of food experiments and other items toward the International Space Station today. I'm Marty Johnson reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We have written to the chairperson of the Zambia Electoral Commission, Madam Justice Irene Mambirima, calling for an urgent meeting to be convened of all the stakeholders in the political process.
The president of the Law Association of Zambia calls on political parties to stop their supporters from engaging in violence ahead of the upcoming election.
When the FSS raided our office, what they told the whole world was that they were working on information that you are attempting to clone government voters' cards.
The spokesman of a major Nigerian opposition party denies allegations that supporters of the party plan to rig the February poll.
The MDGs adopted in the year 2000 set bold targets for development and were key in forging a global cooperation framework for development.
And South Africa takes a leadership role at the group of 77 at the United Nations. We'll have details, those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The president of the Law Association of Zambia has called on political parties and other stakeholders to work together to end political violence in the run-up to the January 20 presidential by-election. George Chisanga told me earlier that he has yet to receive any feedback from political parties and security officials about his call to end clashes between supporters of rival groups.
We have written to the chairperson of the Zambia Electoral Commission, Madam Justice Irene Mambirima, calling for an urgent meeting to be convened of all the stakeholders in the political process. This is because there have been incidences of violence, and we are thinking as large that this needs to be nipped in the bud before it degenerates into chaos. So we made that call. In fact, for the record, it's the second time that within the last 1 month that LAS is calling for a free and fair election where there will be no violence. Immediately the date of the election was announced, we went to the press and informed the public that we expected people to be, you know, to be fit in the way they're going to be campaigning. We expected leaders of political parties to control their cadres, because elections are a national event. They are not for politicians alone. Everybody would like to participate in elections in the country.
Some people are expressing concern that security agencies, including the police, tasked with that mandate to ensure peace, stability, to protect people from violence, appear to not to do their job. Do you subscribe to that view, and have they stepped up to the plate to ensure their mandate is carried out?
As Law Association of Zambia, we don't entirely subscribe to that viewpoint. We think that the police are doing quite a lot of work under the circumstances. I think it's just a question of putting logistics in place that help the police to properly police the public events that politicians are involved in. If you've seen what has happened in the last two incidences that we've actually referred to in our letter to the Honourable Chairperson, it is where two opposing political parties find themselves in one geographical location, gunning for police for votes among a section of the population in the same area. That's where we've seen these events of violence actually taking place. The first one took place in the northern part of Zambia, where both the Patriotic Front and the ECND found themselves in one province and at one section of the society. And as a result, the police seemed to be overpowered. The same happened in Western Province, which was even a much more worrisome experience that the people had there. Again, it is the Patriotic Front cadres and leaders, and also UPND cadres and leaders, finding themselves within the same area of the airport area where this event also took place. It's a question of just not putting proper logistics in place. But our worry is that in the next week, we'll be drumming up the final leg in their campaign. It might become much more difficult to control this crowd.
What has been the response of these political parties to your call for an immediate end to violence, although some of the political leaders will say that they don't subscribe to violence against each other?
As at the time I'm speaking to you, sir, we haven't received any communication back from the political parties that we copied in our letter to the chairperson. Neither have we received the letter from the chairperson herself. But I think it's too early in the day. I have tried to make follow-up phone calls. I have been informed that most of these people that I would have wanted to speak to in the course of the day have been locked up in meetings. I presume only that they were having meetings connected with our letter that we wrote to them. The Inspector General of Police was not able to return our call because they were having a meeting. I also called the Assistant Inspector General of Police, who also didn't return my call because they were in a meeting. But I expect that the Secretary Generals of the political parties that we copied are together on the campaign trail with their president. We have assigned somebody, a secretary, to make follow-up phone calls so that we can agree on a position of basically how urgently we can have this meeting. But that we must have this meeting urgently cannot be overemphasized.
Some Zambians are saying that no Zambian life should be lost because of somebody's quest to gain power. What is your message to the people of Zambia ahead of this upcoming election?
I think the message we would have is basically a repeat of what we have already advised. Zambia is known as a beacon of peace in the Southern African region and also even in the whole of Africa. We need to keep, such kind of values dear that always make sure that when we have an election, as we are about to have in the next 1 week, we don't allow a situation that degenerates into a violent election. We've had peaceful elections and peaceful transitions of power for a period from 1964 up to now. We can only remind the Zambians that we owe this duty to ourselves, especially the political leaders. We can only remind them to control their crowds, to tame their cadres, and give them valuable advice on why it is important to have a violent-free election, because we have said that any election that is marred with threats, with violence, with intimidation, it's not a credible electoral process. It takes away, the honor that people know Zambia to be as a country where elections are held in an environment or atmosphere that is free and fair. So we can only remind the Zambians that it's our duty to make sure that even this election, like many others before, is held in an environment where there's no violence.
George Chisanga is the president of the Law Association of Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. The spokesman for Nigeria's main opposition All Progressives Congress, or APC, has denied accusations that it plans to electronically rig the February general election by hacking into the server of the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC. Lai Mohammed told me that the allegation is aimed at preventing the Electoral Commission from using the biometric system, which INEC plans to use to reduce voter irregularities during the poll.
I've never seen a more partisan, a more biased, a more shallow security organization as the SSS. Because if you look at the report, it's so wishy-washy, it's so unprofessional. On 24th of November, the SSS came to our offices, our database office in Ikeja, vandalized all our equipment, took away all our, system, and about 50 days later, came with fabricated, evidence that we were trying to attack the INEC database. In the first instance, when the SSS raided our office, what they told the whole world was that they were working on information that we were attempting to clone government voters' cards. 50 days later, they cannot come up with one single clone card to show the world. Now they've changed their story. That is actually that we are trying to hack into the INEC system. I see INEC has the same practice.
Are you therefore saying that the DSS, as a security agency mandated to protect life and property, is fabricating all these proof it says it has against the APC? Is that your stance?
What I'm saying is that you see, the DSS is so strongly partisan today that they cannot even face the primary duty for which they were set up. I'm saying that the SSS today is so partisan that they've become nothing but the security arm of the PDP. What I'm saying today is that if any security or intelligence gathering organization of any country to behave the way the SS is behaving, they were not surprised that the country has problems with Boko Haram and other subnational groups. Because there's nothing professional about them at all.
Now, so how are you responding to these accusations being leveled against you?
We have sent our response, but it should be ignored completely. We are totally ashamed that this is an organization that belongs to Nigeria and that it's a disservice to the country. And you see, what the spokesperson of the SSS, CEO, told you was just a figure of lies. They have not charged anybody to court. On the contrary, we are the one that went to court because they tried to obtain, confession from the arrested staff via transport. They were flown in from Lagos to Abuja blindfolded. They were manipulated. They got here to Abuja for 10 days. Even the pregnant women among them were denied access to their drugs, all in an attempt to fabricate, confession. They should be ignored completely. We dare them to go to court.
Lai Mohammed is the spokesman for Nigeria's main opposition, Our Progressives Congress, APC. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. South Africa has taken leadership of the United Nations' Group of 77, a coalition of developing nations within the international body. The new post puts South Africa in a position both of power and responsibility as the UN enters its deadline year for the Millennium Development Goal, Global Targets for Developing Nations. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Powell looks at how Africa's most developed nation plans to tackle this global challenge.
South African officials know they have picked a particularly interesting year to land leadership of the United Nations Group of 77. The year 2015 will present an unprecedented challenge to the UN's largest coalition of developing nations, as this is the deadline year for the Millennium Development Goals, the UN's 8 global targets. The G77 represents a third of the UN's membership and includes nations as diverse as Bosnia and Herzegovina, a once war-torn nation that is now striving to join the European Union, and Somalia, a chaotic, violent, woefully underdeveloped nation on Africa's east coast. South Africa's Deputy Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Llewellyn Landers, made clear that he understood the gravity of the situation in his acceptance speech before the group in New York this week. The development goals, he said, will be a top priority.
This year will prove to be a crucial year in which the various envisaged development processes would demand that we as a group remain even more steadfast in promoting the interests of developing countries. The MDGs adopted in the year 2000 set bold targets for development and were key in forging a global cooperation framework for development. Foremost in our efforts this year will be the evaluation of the progress made in reaching these goals and the negotiation of the post-2015 development agenda.
But Landers also reminded the world's superpowers of the collective might of the group. South Africa has repeatedly hinted at its own global ambitions, notably by joining BRICS, the economic bloc of Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Landers noted that the Group of 77 will continue to press to upturn the Northern Hemisphere's grip on global power. All five of the UN Security Council's permanent members, Britain, China, France, Russia, and the US, are northern nations.
South-South cooperation is key for international cooperation and partnerships for development. This is especially in terms of global, regional, and country-level efforts to achieve balanced, sustainable development. We must reiterate that South-South cooperation is not intended to be a substitute for the obligations and responsibilities of the North. Over the last few years, several developing countries have become the key drivers of global growth, and their development is having a significant impact on the world economy. Growth and economic development in the South has significantly altered the strategic balance of power towards the countries of the South.
This year could bring about the shift in power dynamics that South Africa has called for so many years at the UN. Or the hoped-for outcome could dissolve into nothing but words again, with no solution in sight. Either way, 2015 is going to be interesting. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Zimbabwean government has ordered fuel traders to reduce the price of fuel, citing a drop of oil prices on the international market. For VOA Studio Services reporter Thomas Chiriparsi has details from the capital, Harare.
Energy and Power Development Minister Samuel Undenge issued the directive Friday, saying oil prices have dropped by almost 50% on the world market. Since June last year, crude oil prices on the international market have gone down from $118.18 to $71.83 per barrel. Undenge told a news conference in Harare today that all fuel traders should reduce fuel prices by January 14th, adding that the government will take stern measures against dealers who would have defied the directive.
Our own fuel prices on the market have not gone down that much in tandem with crude oil prices, but should, however, go down to levels that reflect crude oil prices, having factored in all costs relevant to obtaining the refined products that we buy. The major reason for this is the fact that the local industry's response to these international price variations have not been quick enough, hence the current outcry by the motoring public.
The energy minister also said a hike in fuel prices should be effected at least 2 weeks after the announcement of an increase in oil prices on the international market.
Our import bill is a huge one, and everybody has been crying that, you know, let's reduce our imports, let's do something so as to save foreign currency. Hence the policy intervention to produce ethanol so that it will be used for petrol blending. And that would cut down on our huge import bill. You recognize that when we go to E15, as we go up the ladder, as more ethanol is produced, then it means we import less petrol. And internally, we generate economic activity. Not only that ethanol is used for petrol, the byproducts are used to produce electricity, to produce energy. And if Zimbabwe is to develop, we should encourage such projects. You will agree with me over that.
Some fuel dealers told Studio 7 that they have not reduced the price of petrol and diesel because they are still selling carryover stocks. But Undenge noted that it only requires fuel traders a maximum of 2 weeks to finish selling their stock. Fuel dealers are currently selling diesel and petrol at an average price of $1.50 and $1.50 per liter, respectively. Responding to a question on why blended fuel remained expensive, Undenge said the price reflects the cost of transporting ethanol fuel from the blending point to service stations. Some economists say they expect prices of many commodities to go down following the reduction of fuel prices. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiriparsi.
Aid workers in the Central African Republic, or CAR, are struggling to keep track of hundreds of thousands of people displaced by conflict. In Bambari, a town on the front line of the CAR's inter-community violence, aid groups are saying the displaced people need to be counted. For VOA, Nick Long has this report.
The international non-governmental organization Triangler, or Triangle, is one group publicly calling for a headcount of the population living in Bamari's displacement sites. Other groups are saying the same thing privately. Renaud Offray is in charge of Triangler's work for displaced people in Bambari. VOA accompanied him to one of the sites.
Malheureusement, le recensement He says there has not been a proper count at the site for a long time, so there is no precise figure for its population, and as a result, Triangle's work is inevitably a bit random. Auffray hears many complaints at the sites that aid is not being distributed fairly. He admits this is likely, as there are no reliable lists of who is there and when they arrived. This man is complaining that there are displaced people who came to the site in June who have still not received anything from the World Food Programme. Another frequent complaint at the site is about cash for work opportunities. This man complains that others who came to the site after he did have received cash for work while he is still waiting. He says this is because the supervisors give the work to people they know. Aid workers also say privately that there are many anti-Balaka militia in the camps who are exploiting the others. Yes, the anti-Balaka are here, says this man. VOA asked him if the anti-Balaka protect people, and while he was thinking about that question, a young man carrying a club stepped forward and said yes. Yes, I am an anti-Balaka, says the young man, adding that there are many of the militia at the site. The anti-Balaka collect money from businesses at the sites and also exercise social control, even getting involved in marital disputes, according to aid workers. The militia is believed to have stirred up a witch hunt at one of the Bambari sites that resulted in two women having their ears cut off. One of these women took refuge at the UNHCR base for 11 days and was then flown to the capital, Bangui. The UN refugee agency UNHCR has overall responsibility for monitoring displaced people in Bambari and elsewhere in the CAR. The deputy head of the UNHCR for the country is Francesco Ardisson. He tells VOA that while the agency registers refugees, people displaced from another country, there is normally no registration of people displaced inside their own country. Instead, the agency estimates their number at each location by identifying households or families. In general, UNHCR relies on community leaders to supply figures for households and household members, and then makes estimates based on those figures. There could be a tendency to exaggerate the figures, says Ardisson. That's common at all sites for refugees and displaced people, he says, adding that the challenge is to revise those figures regularly so that the aid response is realistic and not exaggerated. But, he says, any registration of people would be out of date within weeks because the displaced often move back and forth between their homes and displacement sites, as the security situation permits. As for protecting people from witchcraft accusations, Ardisson says that, regrettably, these are common in this region, where so-called witches are killed every month, and the agency cannot be expected to change social attitudes overnight. Nick Long for VOA News, Bambari, CAR.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked, VOA Africa. Don't miss.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. And as you know by now, it's time for music from African Collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Rrrr, 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 rr mapenzi kwa mganga yaponda kabisa. Hizo zilipendwa vijana wengi mjini, suruali chini ndo mtindo mpaka maofisini. Hizo zilipendwa ofisadi serikalini, chale uzamani limbikiza kisha ule na nani. Hizo zilipendwa usiku kwa ofisini, toi kazi bila penzi kazi ya nini. Hizo zilipendwa ala ingupu ajali, ajali kilindo mali. Hizo zilipendwa nasema tena si mali, kweli si mali, tende halali. Hizo zilipendwa zilikuja zikapendwa, zikapendwa zikaenda. Zilikuja zikapendwa pendwa, zikapendwa zikaenda. Zilikuja zikapendwa, zikapendwa zikaenda. Zilikuja zikapendwa pendwa, zikapendwa zikaenda. Shika kamata chinja kabisa na sema safari tu avumba njo nuksi no mado na koma kwenye mchakato ili mpate do wenye roho mbaya zao nyaga na sema tena kijao nyaga sana tiko na wamaliza pendo jana nipenda mimi mama tikisa face hizo zilipendwa tukala bongo tujikazeni cheni ubazazi muze timu etikisa noti. Zilipendwa pia sirika fulani cheni ushetani kusambaza kwa makusudi. Hizo zilipendwa nasema tena si mali, kweli si mali, twende halali. Hizo zilipendwa nasema tena si mali, hata jalali hafurahi hali. Zilikuja zikapendwa, zikapendwa zikaenda. Zilikuja zikapendwa pendwa, zikapendwa zikaenda. Zilikuja zikapendwa Tonya Mbiri ndani Bomb Records kama kawa usio fadhili mwapi imbro jembe wa majembe niko ndani Bomb Records Shady Clever wachezeshe na mnai, wachezeshe na mnai sasa. Chaka mchaka chinja insalama adija, 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 chaka mchaka chinja Salama Adija, chaka chaka chinja. Salama Adija, chaka chaka chinja. Salama Adija.
Para Marino.
Nizingua, nitaka junge na mimi, kama ni pesa we kunywa tanunua. Mimi mwanzo sikuamini, nikajuaga vya kuzua. Umemjinga ni mimi, minaitunza wenzangu wanachukua. Ay, oh mapenzi, oh mapenzi linifanya kamtoto nilie vibaya. Mie siwezi, walo nikuta weniache niseme jina. Oh mapenzi, ya linifanya kamtoto nilie vibaya. Nana mingi America moyo
nataka kulewa
nataka kulewa
leo
nataka kulewa
leo
tukipanda ni mwage andi
nataka kulewa
leo
nataka kulewa
leo
nataka kulewa
leo
tukipanda ni mwage andi
dunia chingeni
na pete kwa kumoa kukata vili milini ya wazushi wanapyo na mponda umewe zangu na mimi ni bure tunajisumbua situko kama shirini mabuzi vingasti wengine na waonga oh mapenzi ya nilifanya kamtoto nilie vibaya miya siwezi walo nikutoe niache niseme jina oh mapenzi ya nilifanya kamtoto nilie vibaya tena mengi
kwanza kabisa nsenyonga tai t-shirt na jeans itatupa kidogo itanasibu simiti dai asijekona muni akapandisha mboga na ukifika wagize chai savana takila usipe kisoga kusuma vazi kimine fai tupia pendeza la za kimono Ukanyoa kiduku kamoze yogo Eti shopping trendy tai Wakati dadangu wanaduka kidogo Kikutangu na usika tai Wezugo napenda taka mongo Usuka bila mwana sadai Mama wana noma taka mongo
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It is always a pleasure for me to share my thoughts with regard to America's relations with the continent of Africa. Every passing week, I pay close attention to details regarding headlines on these matters. This week, I talk to you under very grave circumstances with regard to events taking place in France. It is definitely related to America's relations with Africa on a number of bases. First of all, the tragic death of human beings who use their pen to educate others in the domain of free thoughts were put to an end by other human beings who have not learned to recognize that human beings have the ability to reflect on the human condition and to think and make fun and joke with other human beings in the name of humor. And just a tradition which goes back to the past of the human race. Lo and behold, modern human beings who are living 1,000 years after the Crusades, when young kids from Europe traveled all the way to fight for a crusade and die, cooler heads prevailed. They put an end to the atrocity of young people dying, going all the way from Europe. Today, 1,000 years after the Crusades, we have young people who are still prisoners of old metaphysics, which have not been looked at to understand that we as a race have made progress as a human beings, and we are making progress. And that is one of the reasons why what happened in France was condemned by the President of the United States and all cooler heads who now recognize that at this period in time in our evolution as a race, we have to learn to live with one another, not to kill one another. We have evolved beyond animality. When we are prisoners of human thoughts grounded on false notions of reality, when human beings can have beliefs, tolerate one another, and they recognize the fact that you can never convince other people about your metaphysics. As human beings living on the planet Earth, they have to learn to live with one another, knowing fully well that they will always have different metaphysics to govern themselves in this world. There are those who believe in reincarnation, such as the Yorubas, the Wolof, and many other African before they were exposed to Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. They believe, like the Hindus, the Jains, and others, that they have a multi-entry visa back to this life. Those who are Muslims, Christians, and Jews have a one-way ticket. After the Crusades and all these religious wars, they learn to recognize, under the guidance of modernity and globalization, that they have to live with one another and they have to forget their own feelings, which led to crusades and all these religious battles. In Europe, Catholics and Protestants used to kill one another over theological differences. Today, they learn to live with one another. European anti-Semitism against Jews came out of those fanatisms and theological miscalculations. At this point in history, we have to remember that we have gone through five revolutions. We have the French revolutions, which changed the manner in which the Europeans look at human beings, how they relate to kingship and worship. We have the French Revolution going side by side with the American Revolution. The Americans had a different attitude towards kingship and church. That's why the Americans evolved differently. That's where we have Fourth Amendment rights, which is similar to what the French have, but they are different. The English evolved differently. And that is one of the reasons why we learn to recognize as thinkers how we can cross the demarcation line, defining how not to antagonize one another, because there is a thin line between metaphysics and physics. In the realm of physics, all these human beings who are running back and forth with their cell phone, they are dominated by physics. Lo and behold, they are still prisoners of their own metaphysics. And they cannot recognize that you have to live with other human beings in the world of physics, regardless of how you think about yourself. You have to learn to recognize that other human beings have a right to believe differently from you. In the realm of physics, you can run with your cell phone, but in the realm of metaphysics, you may live in another world. You cannot kill other human beings because they differ with you metaphysically. You learn to recognize that you are a human being. You're affected by physics and metaphysics. But you must learn how to live as a human being who has freedom of thought. The tragedy for the young people in Africa and the rest of the world today is they are now having a new idolatry of radical individualism, which is negotiated by the creature comforts of modern science and technology. But they try to disguise their weaknesses in the name of metaphysics when they are angry with the sense of confusion in their own life. And that's the message that comes out of this recent development, which has implications for our telecasters, our journalists, our reporters, and most importantly, our politicians. How can we deal with these young people who have identity problems as to who they are, because they are the victims of nationalism, black victims of globalization, victims of modernity, victims of poor cultural engineering? That's the way it is today, as I see it. Out of anger, but trying to budget my emotions so that we can all be with this reality here and now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thanks for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if you think you are too small to make a difference, then you haven't spent a night with a mosquito. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. The United States continues to call for constructive engagement between Israelis and Palestinians to reduce tensions and work toward peace. State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki said, hard as it is, all sides need to find a way to work constructively and cooperatively together to lower tensions, reject violence, and find a path forward. She spoke after the Palestinian Authority formally requested membership in the International Criminal Court, the ICC, a move that could allow war crimes complaints to be filed against Israel. The United States is deeply concerned by the Palestinian action regarding the ICC, said Ms. Psaki. This action, she said, is entirely counterproductive and does nothing to further the aspirations of the Palestinian people for a sovereign and independent state. It badly damages the atmosphere with the very people with whom they ultimately need to make peace. The United States continues to emphasize that the path to a two-state solution, with a Palestinian state living side by side in peace and security with Israel, can only be achieved through direct negotiations between the two parties. The focus right now, said State Department spokesperson Psaki, is to continue to encourage both sides and to reiterate that constructive engagement and lowering of tensions is the only way to move forward to a more peaceful environment.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.